Well, it is. It certainly is beginning to feel like it's well and truly winter. I got maybe one of my last shoreline rides of the season, and you never know when your last one's going to be.
I think worse than the temperature is just the how dark
the darkness.
It gets.
Oh my gosh,
really, it's getting to me already.
It really is. And I'll say, you guys have seen my Instagram stories. Thank God for Zwift. I don't know what I'd be doing without it. As much as it's depressing, it's so much better than the alternative, which I know we're going to get into a little bit tonight. To jump in, though, and I'll say really quickly, this isn't sponsored, but this is something, this is cool. We're allowed to be editorial on this. Former Maybird guy, local Utah company in the cycling space.
Yeah, Adam Barker. That,
Adam Barker, some of you guys would have known Adam. I should say in the cycling space, not really in the cycling space so much as just the sports. The men's kind of he's a cyclist, but I don't want to box this in because like looking at their material, it doesn't look like this is truly limited to bikes. But I'll tell you guys a story. The story starts with little 10th grade me joining this crazy mountain bike team, and I think that there were two moments that really solidified that this was my new religion and it's what my life would be all about. The first was when I was given my first pair of Skyline bibs. I remember that. That was a big deal for me. The second was when I finally took the plunge, shaved my legs, then you start clipping in all the other stuff. I think I might have started shaving my legs before I started clipping in. The timeline on that's unclear. But since I was...
That's not typical.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, there you go. I'm just that cool. Since that fateful day all those years ago, I think the longest I've gone without shaving my legs is maybe 4 or 5 days. I have not been blessed with the ability to grow any sort of facial hair, but when it comes to leg hair, my cup runneth over. I'm really good at growing leg hair. So I'm kind of a every other day leg shaver. I'm pretty over the top about it, even over the winter. So we've got this interesting shave system I'm holding here that I'm going to give a shot. And I do want to report back on this. It's probably the most substantial feeling razor I've ever, because I just use the Harry's razor, which I've been pretty happy with. I don't have a problem with my current razor.
Good. The razor's almost so heavy it's kind of hard to lift.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's really cool, actually.
They've got this other stuff. So I did want to kind of throw out, if you're interested, definitely go check their stuff out. It's called Bolt. Look it up. They had a funny YouTube video that's extremely well produced.
Yeah.
That I thought was kind of a laugh. I did want to throw it at the beginning. I'm going to be using this. I'll let you guys know what I think.
And it's basically, I think it's really cool because I saw him set up his booth at the last Point to Point.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the gist of the business is it's a product that's specific. More than just a product. It's like a system that's specifically designed to help make it easier for men to shave their legs.
Right.
It's kind of designed for coarser hair and
huge bulging muscles like I have, you know, very much intended for me. I will say again, this is something that I pressure everybody to do. Shave your legs. It's cool. Don't get a tattoo that says, I'm a cyclist. Look at me. Shave your legs.
Yeah.
Makes them look buffer too.
So Andrew's already been trying this product.
I'm going to give one a shot. I'll tell you guys what I think. I'm fascinated. I'm definitely interested, you know, because I was just telling Dan, this is a big part of my life. This crops up all the time. So news outside of that, we had a couple things. First, I do want to throw out, I'm very excited because this is a big part of my mental health. Maybird Zwift rides will start on Wednesday, which for most of you listening, this will be tomorrow. I think most of you will listen to this on Tuesday. We're going to start Wednesday rides again, unless people tell us otherwise.
Yeah.
6 p.m. I will say the turnout for these is great. We have groups, no matter where you are, I guarantee there's someone faster than you, and I guarantee there's someone slower than you because Dan's doing them. But
I am the virtual sweep.
Yeah. Like, and these are, they're an hour and a half long. It's a really good way to motivate yourself to stay in the trainer for a while. You can go as hard or as easy as you want there. I'm like, as much as it's something that we kind of preach against, there are kind of hard groups that turn into a little race. I think for me, like my goal over the winter is mostly to burn calories and not get fat. So like, I'm totally game to go out and hammer. I was going to say, if, you know, like a lot of the boys last year, I felt like I was racing, were probably like breathing through their nose and flipping through TikTok while I was being dragged through the gates of hell. Point is, no matter what you're looking for in your Zwift ride, Wednesday night, joining super easy. I'll put information out on Instagram. Link to join will go out as well. But I did want to say that that will be starting regularly or semi-regularly moving forward. So totally open to anybody with the Zwift. we'll be talking more about Zwift and trainers soon, but like it, non-team people, anybody, everybody's welcome. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Now transitioning to the big one for this week. I think pretty much the perennial classiest rider on Maybird, what, like 20 years running now, Helena Archibald. And hopefully this isn't the first you're hearing of this, but if it is.
Okay. First of all, everybody just loves Helena.
Yes.
She's just,
she has very few haters.
She's just one of the most lovable people you're ever going to meet. One of just the greatest people walking on the planet right now. And she had just, she had an awesome final Nike season. I was just so proud of her. Just consistently high up on the podium every single race. And then, you know, after her Nike season was over, she went out and got the Red Butte Garden KOM, stole it from Golden Dream. Which
it's a big deal.
If you know, you know.
If you're on Strava, you know that's nothing to nothing to sneeze at. Sneeze at? Sniff at. Don't sneeze at it either. Nothing to sniff at.
And then she announced to very few people that she was going to do, in her own words, as many Everest laps as she can.
Mm.
But it turns out internally she was planning on doing this thing.
That doesn't surprise me. It's funny with the Everest thing. It almost kind of feels like forever, like it, people in cycling are obsessed with the hour record, and you'll have rumors that so-and-so is going to be doing an hour attempt this year, and it's going to be, you know, kind of feels like that with the Everest thing, that the Gibbons have done it and Helena's done it. I'm sure some other psycho on the team's kind of chewing on it in the near future. And we talked about it a couple weeks ago with the Gibbons, but if you missed it, Everesting in its purest form is repeating the same climb again and again and again until you climb the equivalent of Mount Everest, which from sea level is 29,029 feet. Mm-hmm. I did notice Helena went over that in her characteristic overachiever kind of way, you know, threw in a few extra feet at the end.
Let me just throw it there. She knew when she hit 29,029.
Yeah.
But finished the lap anyway.
Which is insane. And I say this with all the love in the world, psychotic. But super cool. And again, like if I would say go back and listen a few weeks ago, we talked about the Gibbons. We went into a detail a little more, but it is one of the biggest efforts
and
in
so
cycling.
It's crazy. And so she started Friday night at about 10 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
rode all through the night, Friday night, and then rode all day Saturday. And then it got dark. She kept riding until after 10 o'clock. Saturday night.
It was like 25-ish hours. Done on a mountain bike, too.
Done on a mountain bike.
Which, if you know, you know. That's
it's
also,
a lot harder.
Also ludicrous behavior.
A lot harder.
On probably a 2.4...
She had 2.4 Aspens.
Had. They're gone now. I was going to ask on this one. For her, so she did it in the Cove, right?
Yeah.
Going up, what, like past Churchill and then up?
Just that road that goes past Churchill, like through the four-way stop.
Yep.
And then up to the top and then flipped it. And I think did close to 45, 50 laps somewhere in that range. And so, you know, and her parents were parked at the bottom and were like making sure she ate and drank after each lap. And very well prepared, very well organized. Like you can't just go out and do an Everesting attempt.
It takes a village. It really does.
It takes
hours of prep.
It basically takes a team to support you.
You got your parents there. You got friends. You've got some very confused neighbors.
So her parents were just awesome and just were so organized and had all kinds of good stuff for her. I just feel so lucky because I got to ride with her. I did like 4,500 feet of it with her towards the end of the ride when she
By the way, 4,500 feet is a lot.
That's a big climb.
That's a big old ride.
And the thing
after 4,500 feet, I'm hitting Cafe Rio for a burrito, having a Coke and going to bed.
Yeah. You know? I was fairly tired after just doing that.
How many laps was that?
I can't remember exactly how many laps, but it seemed like
six or seven?
Yeah, I think about six. It was about 640 feet per lap. So,
jeez.
You know, I might have to do a little math there, which I don't do.
Yeah, neither of us. I don't know if you can tell by our career choices, but neither of us are math whizzes.
But I got to do some of her final laps, and And I was just thinking, it really changed me as a person. First of all, it made me realize the Everesting is no joke. Like,
you just now realized that? If I'd asked you 2 days ago, you would have been like, you know.
No, it really, really made me appreciate what an undertaking it is. I know it's just crazy. And Helene, honestly, is the first female cyclist that I know personally that's done it.
Mm.
And so she'll definitely go down in some local cycling history books for that. But
yeah,
just seeing how bad she wanted to quit on those last few laps, but wouldn't let herself was kind of life changing, actually. Like, it made me want to go out and do something big and cool, you know? And, so
I think it's a really clear distillation of what we hope to achieve with Maybird. Cause like, as much as it pains me to say, like, just going out and riding bikes doesn't change anything. It's what riding bikes does to you, that it makes you the kind of person. And I'm sure there's a lot of other factors in Helena's life and psychology that make her that way. But like, when you see somebody who has just the almost ridiculous level of self-control and determination to go achieve that, like, Helena's the kind of person, we're going to turn loose on the world and she's going to do whatever she wants. You know, she's going to do a lot of really great things and help a lot of people because she has that ability.
Yeah. And she already has. And so
yeah.
Huge shout out. That's just so cool. Now let me just throw out a caution here. Don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's hard on your body.
If you look at the riders from our team who have attempted it, you're looking at like Gabe Norda, the Gibbons, Helena, you know, like those are the best of the best. And not to discourage anyone, like, it's definitely in your future. If this is something you want to do, great, but this is not to be taken lightly.
I think you have to be kind of like a somewhat elite level for several years.
Yeah, before, for several years even, yeah.
Before you attempt something like
this. You need to be really comfortable doing a hard 5 or 6 hour ride to go and attempt a 25 hour ride. You know, like I think if you got through point to point and it was a breeze, maybe you're ready, kind of a thing.
I think that would almost be a good.
Be my benchmark. Like, until you've done a point to point,
point to point's not a huge deal. Then
yeah, like there's definitely several riders on our team who are very capable of it. This is not, because I would even say like something like Trugert or point to point. Hey, you know what? You could throw a Hail Mary and grit your way through it. But like point to point for me was 9 hours, right? Point to point for most people is 10 to 12, right? This is double that. And that, again, for it to count truly, like, you can do a ride where you do everything, but most people, for it to count, and again, I'm not going to go into why it counts and doesn't, because there's actually an official organization that officiates these, because that's how cool cycling is. Huge sarcasm there. You have to do it on this. So like the psychological toll and then just the physical toll, holy smokes, man. So
it takes a special
don't take
person.
It lightly. I would say if you're considering it, maybe chat with Dan. And he could kind of gut check you on like, is this really something that you want to attempt now? What are the odds of you being successful in this? What's it going to, you know, so
yeah.
Do want to throw out that caution that this is, I mean, we feel very comfortable saying harder than point to point. This is like,
oh yeah,
this is very, I mean, it's obviously very different.
Helena needs to do point to point next year. It'll be a piece of cake.
Like, oh yeah. Yeah. So really, really cool for her. The last thing I did want to throw out, unless you have any other news,
I think we're...
We're at that time of year. We are making preparations for the 2025 season. We're arguing over kits already. All of that stuff is rolling. If you know people that you think should be part of the Maybird family, now's the time. Start those conversations. We don't have a date for a launch meeting yet. That's usually in early January. So, you know, month and a half, 2 months out from now. As always, Maybird's open to anybody. Financial barriers aside, even, like, we want you to join. As you know, some people age out of the team. A lot of people, you know, pursue other things after high school, and we see less of them. Families with younger siblings. We want all the younger siblings. We want...
coaches,
like, Nike coaches, like, throw it out there. Maybird is definitely not in a position right now. Like, looking at the, like, growth last year was about flat. We gained about as many as aged out, maybe even were a slight.
I think we were slightly lower.
A slightly smaller team than we were before. So like, there's no concern of us having too many riders. We can handle, we've projected forward different kind of growth projections where we could handle quite a few more riders as long as we have the adult ride leader support. So
and the youth coaches as well. If you're like,
yes,
you know, in fact, I was actually talking to Brady. We were at the last Skyline final party, and he was talking about how a lot of these newer Skyline riders never get to see like some of these top varsity riders riding and get exposed to them and so forth, which is kind of a shame. Yeah. But that's why I think, you know, if you are a top varsity JVA rider that takes this seriously, please consider leading a group.
And I will say too that a lot of you guys were brought up by, you could probably name your primary mentor. You were like, oh, I was in so-and-so's group and I learned a lot from them. That person donated some time to give you the skills to do this. And as much as I want to say like, oh, and it's a nice thing if you do it, I kind of think it's on you to pay it forward and to go be that mentor for someone else. You know, that I've been coaching the green group for however many years now, and I've seen a lot of kids come on through that have, you know, have been an awesome, just a joy to work with. So if you're interested, and if you, I would say not even if you're interested, if you can, if you have the ability to step up to the plate, get a group, it's awesome. I will say too, of all of the things on my resume, and I've done a lot of things, an embarrassing number of things, candidly, of all the things on my resume, you would be surprised how often I coached a bike team with this many kids, and that involved doing this much and this much for college apps, for jobs. Like,
it's helped a lot of people get scholarships.
Yes.
It's,
and for us too, like when we have people approach us like, hey, we want to apply for this scholarship, I want to apply for this job, for us to say, you know, I say all the time, I've had phone calls with lots of hiring managers like, yeah, this person coached for us and they knocked it out of the park. You know, like, this is great. So, this is just absolute eye candy for college app, for people who look at college apps too. So, definitely consider that. Invite as many people as you can.
As long as they can ride strong and be kind.
Yes. Don't invite that guy. Everybody other than that guy. Yeah. You know, we all know the one, right? We all know way too many ones. But a launch meeting is in the future, nearish future. So keep an eye out for that. With that in mind, we're going to transition to a topic that, you know, isn't the most fun, but because of
this is fun. It,
because of the beautiful place that we live and the seasonality of riding here in Utah.
It's a blessing.
Yes. It's something that you learn to appreciate. How about that?
Winter, yes.
Winter.
No, well, yeah. Winter really is a blessing. It's an opportunity. And honestly, in a lot of ways, I think it's the training secret weapon.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it in a second. There's things you can do really, really well during the winter that's going to make your fitness. And I'm convinced there's things you can do that's going to ruin your fitness too. You
know? Can confirm.
So let's talk about, first of all, I just want to, we've done this. We do this episode every year.
Yeah. Is this the third version of it that we would have done? Okay.
I purposely didn't go back and listen to any of my previous versions.
No, leave the past in the past.
So, but I would encourage you guys to.
Yes.
You know, because honestly, this podcast isn't getting any better, in case you haven't noticed. You know, so
as if we have to tell you that.
So definitely
it's
go
less
back.
Less crackly than it used to be.
Yeah.
So
definitely go back and listen to previous episodes. But I don't really think any of my opinions have changed too strongly about winter training, but I really hope more than anything that we inspire you to take it seriously and just realize that this is an opportunity.
Yes.
And I don't think it's quite what a lot of people think.
No.
I'll explain what I'm talking about in a second. But first, let me just like, we'll go over some terms, okay?
Yes.
For me, a lot of people call it the off season.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about the off season versus winter training versus winter break. Like, these are all kind of thrown around as synonyms.
So a lot of people talk about, you know, kind of after you finish that last race in October until the first...
From States to Red Rock Rampage. Right,
yeah,
right?
That's the off season. And that is the wrong term. We'll just...
No.
Yeah. There is an off season, but that's not the off season. Okay. So the off season, we've talked about a little bit before. It's essential that after you finish your season, before you start training in a meaningful way again, you take an off season.
Yes.
Now, an off season for youth athletes, I think ideally is about 2 weeks. For older athletes, I think it's about 10 days, 7 to 10 yeah. days.
And this all depends, of course, on how deep you are in your training. You know, if you're struggling to get 2 30-minute rides in a week all year,
and the thing
you'll
is,
need less than...
Those that aren't that weren't that deep into it probably aren't listening.
That's true.
And are going to take the whole winter as the off-season anyway.
So, this is true.
So there's... For the people, it's like a very small group of people that they even need to process what we just talked about there. So
fair enough.
But yeah, so if you were a seriously training, regularly training and competing athlete this season, before you start training again, you need to take a couple weeks off. And by off, I mean, might as well take it off the bike, you know, just get a break from the bike. I would say any activities you do, just keep them below one.
Yep.
Zone one.
Yeah. Don't go. Don't, this is not time to go for your PR on Olympus or something. Chill out.
Just have a couple weeks where you just keep it really, really easy.
Walk the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super important that you get that reset. Like,
yes,
I love to compare like training and gaining fitness to like a sponge. You know, and like when you're training, you know, you've got like, and you're holding the sponge under a faucet, and you're, you know, if you turn the water on too fast, the sponge isn't going to absorb it. It's just going to bounce off the sponge, you know, and if you turn it on just at the right trickle that the sponge is able to absorb it, then you're going to gain fitness. You're going to get faster and so forth. But going back to the sponge analogy, every once in a while, you kind of have to wring out that sponge and wring it out so it can absorb more.
Yes.
And that's kind of what that off season is for. You're actually going to lose some fitness, and that's fine.
Your little Garmin thing's going to say detraining and it's going to hurt you so bad.
Yeah.
And
your CTL is going to go down or whatever.
Yes.
And
this will not be fun, especially if this is the first time you've ever seen that.
Yeah.
Cause a lot of you guys have just been on the up and up since somebody handed you a bike, and the first time you have to accept plateauing or getting a little worse for a few weeks is mentally hard.
But yeah, but that the type of fitness that you're going to lose that quickly, A, you don't need it during the winter.
Yeah. You don't need your sprint watts in January usually.
And B, you're going to get it back really, really quickly. And I mean, I personally have been very hypocritical about this because I'm very compulsive about training. Like, I don't really do it to get fast. I just do it because it's like the highlight of my day.
Because let's really quick, let's address maybe this is a lot of parents listening to this, where cycling is your crutch, and or for like Dan and I, if we're honest, and again, this is never an emphasis for our youth athletes, but maybe for the, you know, because we know a lot of parents listen, you're like, hey, I always put on a few pounds in the winter. You know, like I, my life is busy. Like for me,
it's easier to ride for 2 hours than eat two less cookies.
Right. Yeah. Like, which, oh my gosh, that sucks so bad. I grab as much exercise as I can because my life is busy. Right. But I'm also racing is like a C tier consideration in my life right now. Being fit and being the best cyclist I can be is kind of a B+, pushing into an A tier consideration in my life, right below like my family. Right. So for Dan and I, like, I take some time off and stuff, but you know, like, so if you're listening to this, like, don't feel bad if you're like, you know what, I had such a bad day at work, I need my exercise today. That's okay. For those of you who are like youth athletes whose bodies are in incredible shape and you're 2% body fat all the time and you just live on Nella wafers, because lucky you, enjoy that while it lasts, first off. And second, like, if you really want to be as fast as you can, there is some strategic resting and detraining that you have to do.
Well, this isn't like something we're saying just because we want you to be healthy and we want
this is not some fluffy mumbo jokes. This is is hard-nosed science. No, because we do.
Yeah, we do.
But
this is actually something that I promise will make you faster. And that's something I noticed myself.
Yes.
Is that because I don't really take my recovery seriously.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm good at taking a rest day during the week, but I'm terrible at ever taking ever extended rest periods.
Yes.
And I am just the king of being stale.
Yep.
I'm the king of not progressing.
You need to make a Maybird King of Stale t-shirt.
You know, and if I was more concerned about being faster,
yeah,
I would take this break more seriously.
Yeah.
So actually I am right now as we speak, I am in the middle of my off season.
Ooh.
I'm actually trying to take 10 days off.
Woof.
And I did do some laps with Helena when she was Everesting. So I kind of put it on pause for a little bit, but it actually feels good. You know, I can tell I needed it. And
yeah,
I'm excited to crush it again though. But
that's an interesting point. I want to touch on that. I tell people that like when Tessa goes to Canada for a month or two every summer, it makes you realize how much you miss it. Right. That like day to day, I do not feel the same about her as I do when she's gone. That like you realize that when something is absent in your life that's good for you and that brings you happiness, it makes you appreciate it a lot more. And I think a lot of you are maybe to the end of the season, and maybe even if you won't admit it to yourself, you're like, maybe I'm kind of sick of this, right? Or you're just like so into it that you don't appreciate how good it is. Taking that time off, I think, is interesting mentally too. Not just because it allows you to spend some time doing things that, you know, the cycling schedule precludes, but because it's like, you're like, oh man, I miss this. And that first ride back, it's going to be smoggy and 43 degrees and salty and awful, but you'll want it so bad. You're going to want to get back on the bike. And I think that like, if I lived in Southern California, maybe my relationship with cycling would be different if it just never went away. But when it goes away, it makes those St. George trips just so sweet, right? Then it's like, I wonder in the summer how on earth I have the motivation to ride in the winter. And it's because there'll be a week in the winter when I am so busy and the weather is so bad that I just don't get any training volume in. And when you get it, I think it's really good for you to realize how much you love it and how good it is.
Yeah. You know, and if you do kind of approach the end of the season, you're done, you're ready for break, that's totally fine. You know, but
that's normal.
That's normal. In fact, really, if you've done the work and if you've been really, really working hard and racing hard, you really should be wanting a break.
Yeah. Like, if you're never wanting a break, you're probably not pushing as deep as you can. Yeah,
you might not be pushing
hard
enough towards the end of the season. But then I do think that the off season needs to be fairly short.
Yep.
Because what I've seen is a lot of times when athletes take too much time off, they have a hard time getting back.
Yep.
You know, so. But yeah, so that's the off season. Winter training, they're two different things.
Yes.
Okay? Have we made that clear enough?
Yes.
Yes.
You will still hear me slip up and call it the off season, but that's wrong.
So we call it winter training.
Yes.
And winter training is different. You know, really, winter training is kind of like, it shouldn't look like the rest of your training. It shouldn't be just like spring training, but in the winter. There's some things that are different about it, but I would say that winter training is probably one of the biggest things that would distinguish an elite level rider from a normal average rider.
This is what separates the varsity riders from from the others, right? Yeah. That like this is.
Or I'd say the top varsity riders, like the podium varsity riders from the others, you know. I was kind of thinking about like probably the top three things. I think first is going to be like your consistency, your volume.
Yeah.
And then winter training is just,
it's right up there. Right. Cause up we there. Used to say in the Nike days, you could always tell who works over the winter and you know, people where cycling really is a seasonal thing. Cause the point of that, one of the big points of this episode is that cycling is not seasonal, you know, like riding outdoors is, and it looks different in different seasons, but it doesn't stop if this is your thing.
Well, and not so much cycling. We'll talk about that because the cycling might stop, but
sure. Okay, I should say
improving your fitness doesn't.
Yeah, your dedication to the
to athleticism.
Thank you for clarifying. Yeah. Yes,
and we're going to get to that. But really, you know, like we are kind of forced to do things differently. Like it gets dark early, it gets cold outside, it gets wet, it gets slippery. Your training is, no matter what, going to look different,
right?
Especially because we go to school during the day and work during the day and stuff. So, but it really, really is an opportunity, and it's an opportunity because only certain people really take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And for me personally, it's probably one of the main things that helps me be a somewhat mediocre cyclist. Cause if I took the winters off, I mean, as you get older, you tend to lose fitness faster.
Yeah.
And you know, really, really prioritizing my fitness over the winter is just essential for me.
Because your fitness would probably, I think, and this is frustrating, maybe for some, like some of the adults, like you might need to winter train just to stay the same season over season. And if you don't, you're going to regress.
Yeah. Right? Which is interesting because I was at the Skyline final party tonight and Heidi Preston asked me, you know, how much does it take to maintain your fitness over the winter?
Different answers depending on your last name in that conversation, apparently, but you know,
which is a really good question. But the thing about winter is, well, the thing about maintaining fitness is fairly easy. Like once you get to a certain level of fitness, maintaining it isn't super hard.
Yeah.
What's hard is elevating fitness.
Yes.
You know, that's going to either take like more time or doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, yeah, definitely during the winter, you want to maintain your fitness. But I think we need to think of it as more than just maintaining our fitness. I think, and most of us really wouldn't have an opportunity to like, to elevate it because that would take more time and more.
Like just you let your lifestyle factors are going to prevent you from, you know.
So really what I think the purpose of winter training is yes, to maintain fitness, but also to improve our platform that we can build fitness on.
Yeah.
So fitness, you know, we talked about the off season, we talked about losing fitness. Our fitness is kind of like a sword, or it's kind of starts off as a butter knife.
Buckle up. Here come the metaphors.
Metaphors are going to be good. Okay. It kind of starts off as a butter knife. As we build it, it becomes a sword. Okay. During the race season, we sharpen that sword.
Right.
You get that sword really, really sharp.
Right. If you're the Gibbons or Helena, you've got a lightsaber at the end of the year, right?
Yeah. But that sharp edge on that sword when you stop training disappears really, really quickly.
Okay.
But our goal during the winter is to maintain that sword. You know, if you took the whole winter off, it would turn back into a butter knife.
Just to clarify here, we're saying that it's easier to sharpen the sword. But like once you have the sword, you can sharpen it. But if you just sharpen sharpening the butter knife wouldn't do you much good because you still have a butter knife.
Yeah.
Am I understanding the metaphor correctly?
Well, basically, I'm saying if you don't train over the winter, your sword's going to turn back to a butter knife.
Okay.
Okay. The fitness you lose is just the sharp edge of the sword.
Okay.
But you still have a sword.
I love metaphors.
This one's really torture.
This is this is rough, but it's okay. People get it. People get it.
Yeah. But you want to be able to start your season with a sword and not have to start it with a butter knife every season. Was that just the most worthless metaphor ever? I was pretty proud of it while I was driving.
Anyway, you were saying.
Okay. So it's a time to, yes, it's a time to maintain some fitness for sure. But it's also a time, like I said, to just build our platform, our bodies, so it can handle more fitness in the upcoming season.
Right. Got it.
So
you should have just said that.
Okay. I should have.
Sorry.
Well, and I have seen winter training. I've seen it just cause kids to just put them on a completely new level.
Oh yeah.
To cause them to have a breakthrough season.
After my first winter training, I went from 12th in sophomore to 12th in varsity. Right. Like it. And we see this all the time.
Yeah. But I've also seen it where kids maybe do a little too much of something and I think it kind of causes them to fall flat later in the season too.
Yeah.
So I've seen it kind of make or break people, you know, and so I kind of think there's a right way and a wrong way to do winters. So hopefully we kind of establish that today. Now, a lot of times we like to look to professionals to see what they do, because obviously that's going to be the best for everybody, right?
Right. Always, without exception. So buy a house in Monaco, quit your job, and ride 6 hours a day every day in the winter. Because the reality is most pros, especially on the roadside where they actually make money, they don't live in Belgium, because Belgium's a horrible place to be a cyclist in the winter. The majority of them have, like Peter Sagan, had a house in sunny Monaco, or they spend the whole Winter in Majorca, or there's some other really interesting places some of them go that I've seen. And they're putting in ridiculous amounts of, you know, big, long, fat-burning rides all winter long in a way that just isn't feasible for a person with a job and a life living in Utah. So I should say, out of the gates, the follow the pros approach, I don't think works on this.
Because I was going to say, like, if you could do that, that would be awesome, and that would make you...
A pro.
A pro.
Yeah.
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 That'd make a difference. And I think, but like where we go to like work and school, you get off school, you've only got about like an hour and a half of light before it gets dark.
Yeah.
You're not going to get 4, 5, 6 hour rides every day.
And I should say, out of the gates, don't try that on Zwift. You'll go crazy so fast.
And I would even say, don't try it outside.
No.
Because it's like cold. It's miserable.
It's not worth it. It's not worth winning the iCup, you know? Like, until you start making crazy amounts of money, I don't know, man.
And I have seen kids that maybe did a little bit too much of this in the winter.
There are a few classic examples we could name.
And it didn't go well ultimately, I don't think. It was a
factor in their downfall. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so there's other ways you can maintain your fitness, you can build that fitness platform over the winter. If it's a good day and it's sunshiny and beautiful,
do it.
Go get a big ride in.
Oh yeah.
But don't think that if you want to be like, you know, the fastest kid in the state, that you're going to have to ride 6 hours in January in the slush and pollution and inversion. And yeah, there's other ways for sure. So, so what our version of winter training should look like, in our opinion, would be, so the first thing that I want to encourage everyone to do is HIF training. That's HIF training. Have you heard of that before?
I have never heard of that.
You've never heard of HIF training before?
I have never heard of HIF training. And I think, you know, I haven't ever heard of HIF training. And the smug smile that I'm seeing right now is just not flattering.
Because I made it up, actually. That's
okay. What if I'd bought into that? That would be so me to just be like, check out, like, yep, oh, so HIF, yep. Mm-hmm.
Just for fun, I want you guys all to figure out what HIF training stands for.
Gosh, I was actually paying attention. I didn't co-sign that. I'm trying to trick me. I don't like this. HIF.
So let me explain what it is. So HIF training is like, it's just kind of a whole athlete focus where...
Wouldn't that be half training? What's the acronym really quick for HIF?
They're supposed to try and figure that out.
Ah, my apologies. Carry on.
Okay. So it's a whole athlete focus. Like, you know, we've talked about like a lot of times health and performance aren't necessarily the same thing.
This is true.
This is where during the winter, you should prioritize health over performance.
Okay.
Okay. An example of this would be, rather than eating drinking the super high carb fructose drinks on every single ride that you do, you know, fuel some of your winter training with like real food.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest ones. Just prioritizing nutrition.
Yeah.
It's a good, because sometimes like having good nutrition takes some effort.
Sometimes
it's a lot easier and more convenient to have poor nutrition.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, take some time to prioritize nutrition nutrition is something that's interesting. It's either like the absolute most complicated subject there is ever, or it can also be the most simple.
Have you seen the meme that's like the bell curve? And on both sides, the guy's enlightened, and in the middle, the guy's really upset. Have you seen this?
No.
You keep talking. I'm going to pull up a meme.
Okay. So, yeah, like nutrition can be so complex, but really, for most of the people out there, if you just try to prioritize minimally processed foods, you know, from plant or animal sources, you're going to be in pretty good shape for most people. And then another part of HIF training would be sleep. So sleep is a huge part of HIF training. So have you figured out what HIIT training means yet, Joe?
High intensity freak out. I don't know. Hurry, all faint.
Healthy is fast.
Ah, healthy is fast.
Okay.
I like hurry, all faint better. Healthy is fast.
So I'm hoping that takes off.
Okay.
In fact, can that be our secret word? Just text me HIF.
Text Dan HIF.
H-I-F.
The FBI is going to be like, what in the drug deal's going on here? All these people texting Dan HIF.
Okay, I
you keep talking. I'm making a meme. For the next 3 minutes, I want you to talk while I make a meme.
Wait, can I see the meme? Or
not yet. I have to make it.
Joe's making
I'm generating
meme.
It.
So I'm just going to be talking
fresh,
to
like mama used to make.
Okay. I'm just going to be talking to myself for a second. We could pause it. Okay, I'll keep going. So that's the first one is HIIT training. The second is aerobic training. Now, by aerobic training, I guess pretty much all training that we do is kind of aerobic. But by aerobic training, I'm talking mostly kind of sub-threshold zone 2. And this does not have to be on a bike. It can be, but this can look a lot of different ways. And, you know, and if you're, you know, if your important races are in start in August, the way your aerobic training looks in over the winter is going to have it could have the same outcome in August, whether you're running or Nordic skiing or Zwifting or whatever. So it can look different, but the thing is that by doing the aerobic training, we are maintaining and potentially improving our central adaptations, and the more peripheral adaptations, you know, we can tune those in later once the season starts again. And I feel really weird talking to myself, Joe. I just feel like I'm rambling.
It's going to be so, well, you are anyway. That's what are you doing when I'm talking to you? Ramble on.
Okay. So aerobic training, examples of aerobic training are going to be...
Okay, coming back after a cut, Dan forgot his list of aerobic training stuff. Well, he did. I completed and showed him my meme, and he did think it was funny, and I'll probably put it out on my socials or Maybird's. Was it good, though?
It was good.
It illustrated your point well, right?
Yes.
You did back to your list of aerobic activities.
Okay, so yeah, examples. It could be a lot of things like hiking. I love hiking.
We're hiking evangelists. Yeah.
It's inexpensive. It's easy. It's fun. It's beautiful. It's peaceful. You can go places and get alone. So many good reasons to get into hiking.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably my favorite winter activity.
Yes.
Because I'm not very cool. But another one is steep hiking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because...
What other kind of hiking is there?
Well, you know.
Just kidding.
I could explain the difference between...
What is it? You'll never guess. Come tune in next week to find out.
Yeah, and that is just like when you're, you know, like Grandeur Peak or just like you're really just putting a lot
like of... Like when we lived in the Cove, you'd go outside and just start walking up the hill. You'd be like, I'm going there and a straight line ahead of you and just go up.
It's a fantastic workout and it translates so well to the bike.
Oh, yeah.
You know, running, run walking, you know, if you're not into running yet,
mm-hmm.
Go on a walk and run part of it.
Yes.
And then when you're sick of running, you walk some more.
Yeah.
Good way to get into running. Go to running group too.
Oh yeah.
Running group is seriously.
Running and hiking group coming soon.
Yes. Running. And another thing is hiking is kind of a gateway to running.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not quite ready to run, go on a few hikes and then start doing some running.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing with running is running takes time and it takes patience. It takes several weeks before it ever even gets comfortable.
Well, it takes form. It's not like everybody can run, but very few people can run, right? Like everybody can run away from a bear, but like running the activity, it's kind of like swimming. It's like can you move through a pool? Sure. But like swimming is a skill in the same way. I think running in a way that a lot of people don't appreciate is a skill.
And I think it takes time for your body to just
be okay
with it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't give their bodies enough time.
The first 5 or 10 runs are going to be bad,
but that's why you have to ease into it. And that's the cool thing about running groups. It really does kind of ease you into it.
Yes.
But while we're on the subject, you guys have awesome Central Motors, don't go out and do like a 10-mile run.
Your I first love run. Talking about this. It's the funniest thing ever that you take all of these people with ridiculously good aerobic fitness and zero running form. And you know, it's almost like you're putting a supercharged V8 into a Chevy Spark, you know, like it's just your, the rest of your machine is just wildly unequipped to handle how fast you can get your body to run. And you're capable of doing a run that will ruin you for a month.
It's so funny. Cause you know, you'll see like every year you'll see like Johnny Osgathorpe do his run and
yeah, you'll see me do my run, yeah. You know, where you go and completely throttle yourself because you can.
As much as like, I mean, running's not as much fun for me as a lot of other things, but I do see the value in it.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like, it's so time efficient. Like,
it's much easier to dress for too. Dressing for outdoor cold bike riding is impossible. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to do right. Dressing for a run is much easier.
Yeah. So a lot of kids are into backcountry skiing and ski-mo.
Let's talk about backcountry skiing and ski-mo. Let's talk about all skiing stuff. What are your thoughts? Because I think depending on what flavor of skiing you pick, we have different takes on there.
Well, I do think, I mean, there's definitely some value in lift riding downhill skiing.
Yeah.
And I think the big value there is typically when people do that, they do it for a long time.
Yeah.
You go out for a big, long day typically.
Yeah.
And so I think it does help with some endurance and, you know. And
let's start really quick. That is important to people in a way that like it doesn't matter what the effect on cycling is. For a lot of you guys, that's just a part of your life. And its effect on cycling is irrelevant.
I was going to say, most people don't go downhill skiing to become a better cyclist.
We're going
to
say, we will not tell you, you have to go out and get a ski pass and hit a lot of runs at the Bird to be a good cyclist. That is not something we'll tell you. We'll also tell you that I don't think for most of you, cycling should be 100% of your life, and that you will always have, like, having a family and sustained relationships are suboptimal for cycling performance. I still want you to have them. If skiing is one of those things for you, that's great. I will say, calibrate your expectations, though. If all you do over the winter is Bird laps, that is not optimal for your cycling performance. So again, make your choice. Decide if you know, because I don't like it when I hear people being like, oh, well that is our winter training. We're going to crush it next year because we're doing that. Like, no. If you're doing that, that's great. That's fine.
I mean, it's definitely better than sitting on a couch.
100%.
But it's not ideal aerobic training.
Yeah. So again,
your sort of turn into something between a butter knife and a sword.
And for a lot of you, you're like, oh, cool, great. But I think for those of you who are like our core audience and are honestly the ones who are likely to be listening to this, just know it's not the best option.
It can be part of your winter.
It can totally be part of it, yeah. But that alone is not the best way to tackle this. So let's talk about your other skiing genre.
Yeah, but backcountry is great. Ski-mo's excellent.
Touring's great as long as you know what you're doing and you don't die.
Yeah.
Just 100. It's awesome. It is. It's great.
And I do get a little concerned that it's getting so popular that people are going out. And I've had buddies go out and they get into somewhere, they ski down into something that they can't get out of. So make sure you know where
your fitness and your ambition far exceed your skiing ability.
Make sure you know that the avalanche conditions are safe.
Go with someone who actually knows what they're doing.
Go to a place that's known to be safe.
Don't go somewhere you're going to have to put other people in danger to come rescue your dumb self. You know, all of the warnings with that. Ski-mo, we should talk about, because ski-mo is huge with Maybird and I think is directly tied to why Maybird does so well, especially at some of these endurance events. Let's talk about ski-mo.
Yeah, ski-mo is great.
If you can afford ski-mo, do it. It's as good as it gets.
Yeah, I would say with ski-mo, though, like it's expensive, and if you can't afford it, there's so many other
things. Don't feel like you have to ski-mo. Yeah,
because
we can replace the ski-mo.
In fact, a lot of ski-mo training is running and hiking up steep hills.
Yeah, they're telling you the same stuff, right?
You know, like they'll meet up twice a week and do their ski-mo thing together, but the rest of their training's like running and hiking and so forth, you know. So but that's a fun social way to stay in shape.
If you ever had the displeasure of trying to keep up with McCall or like Landon on a climb, you'll know why ski-mo turns people into weapons on the bike. So that's awesome. A++++.
We looked into ski-mo, too expensive. And so I'm telling Amy, you know, I want her to try to go up Mill Creek, borrow her mom's got a set of backcountry skis and skins that fit her. And, I want her just to go up like the Mill Creek Road a couple times a week, right after school.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic fitness right there.
Also throwing in on that note, Nordic skiing, A++.
Yeah.
Do it. Much safer too. Very few people die doing that. Yeah. Much cheaper. Also, you can, because ever, oh my gosh, so many people buy Nordic ski gear and never use it and list it on KSL for so cheap. Like, mm-hmm. it's pretty cost effective to get into. You've got Little Dell, you've got Mill Creek, you've got all kind the Dell in Sandy. My in-laws go cross country skiing there all the time. Learn how to skate if you can, but even just classic Nordic skiing is awesome. That's another great. I need to do more of that. I always say I'm going to do more of that, and I never do.
Yeah. You know, swimming, you can throw that in there.
Yeah.
Dancing. I mean, there's...
Oh, 100%.
I know some dancers that are really, really fit. That gosh, have become really good cyclists.
Yeah.
Riding outside.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, but again, be really, really careful about strapping on a light and going out at night because...
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Water has this tendency to turn into a solid during the winter.
Yes.
Which can be really, really dangerous.
When yes. I would not night ride in winter myself.
I wouldn't either.
Even daytime riding in winter is iffy. I'll also mention, like, there's the danger. It's also just hard. Like I mentioned a second ago, when the sun is shining and it's 32 degrees, you cannot dress properly. It is impossible. You will be uncomfortable either way. You can either overdress and roast and dehydrate yourself in an hour by sweating out every drop of moisture in your body, or you can freeze to death and have an emotionally harrowing experience where you feel like you're going to die. Some people are tough enough to do it a lot, and there is, and I should say the gear does exist, but the gear, like the jacket that I was given that I think is adequate for winter riding retails for $500. The tights that I have that are adequate for winter riding for me, and I'm a pansy, right, are like $400.
Yeah.
So it is expensive.
Yeah. Trainers are cheaper than proper outdoor riding clothes.
So much cheaper. Yeah. So much cheaper.
But you know, some days are like warm and nice. And
snatch those days. Yeah. Don't ride outside when it sucks.
Yeah.
Is my short answer on that.
And then the last one is the trainer. No, trainers, I enjoy the trainer. I don't hate it. I'm grateful for it. I think it's a blessing. I think riding outside is way more fun.
Oh, yeah.
But the trainer is great. And we're going to do a whole episode on how to use the trainer effectively.
On how to shop for trainers and all that stuff.
Yeah, we'll do a trainer dedicated episode. Usually my advice for youth athletes is try to only use the trainer 2 days a week. And the rest of the days, try to do something else.
Yes.
Might as well.
Try to. That's the ideal.
Yeah. Might as well do something else.
Some of you college students who are really in the pits, the trainer will be a bigger part of that.
And for me, you know, I'm so time crunched in the winter. And I use it almost every day. But I think for youth athletes, where you get out of school a little earlier than most people get off
try to do other stuff.
Try to do other
stuff. I will say, I don't think there's like, and maybe you disagree with me on this, I have a pretty liberal approach to trainers. I don't think very many people are like severely overdoing it on the trainer. I don't think that's something I've observed is like, oh, cause you, like we said, we've seen people overdo it on the outdoor winter riding. I think if I'm interpreting what you're saying, right. And what I'd say to someone is do your absolute best to do other stuff as much as you can. Don't be afraid to throw, don't be like, well, I've already done the trainer twice this week, so I should do nothing today. Right.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'll say about trainers is there's some people that are fine with them and don't mind it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone that just loves it.
No.
That would be kind of weird.
Sounds like a triathlete thing. Just throw some shade there.
There's some people that just absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
And if you absolutely hate it, don't do it. But I will say if you absolutely hate it, you probably don't have a very good setup.
I was going to say, if you absolutely hate it and the last time you rode a trainer was the Obama administration, like... times have changed. It, you know, it's in the past, even just the past 5 years, like the affordable trainers have gotten so much better. If your trainer experience was a CompuTrainer, or like we had our little yellow Nash Bar trainer that was like a, if that's what you're thinking of with trainers, you can spend a few $100 and get a really good setup. And Zwift, you can hate on it all you want, is really, really good.
Yeah. There's really way good. And I think not just the trainer too, I think just your environment that you have it set up in can really make it appealing versus not and so forth. And but you know, but there are some people that hate it. But for me, where you know, I go to work and it's dark and I get off work and it's dark.
And you just have your trainer set up ready to go in your trainer
cave.
Ready
to go. It's like,
it's ideal.
Yeah.
I think you'd be foolish to not have it in the toolbox if you can. It's a lever I think everyone should pull. Sometimes your feelings on it will dictate how often you pull it, but
so
yeah.
And the point is here is like, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do. Just try to do something consistently, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is like, you're going to have to be pretty deliberate about it, because if you're only going to train when you have spare time
and motivation,
you're not,
it's not going to happen for most.
So really you need to plan ahead, know when you're going to do it and what you're going to do and stick to that plan. You know? So those are examples of just some aerobic training just to maintain that aerobic, that central aerobic engine. Lots of different ways to, you know, to maintain some of that type of fitness. You're going to lose some of your peripheral fitness, but you're going to get that back quickly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that was number two. Number three is variety,
which we already kind of talked about.
I just think that the variety is important.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, like riding the bike in the winter is a pain, might as well do something else.
Yeah.
You know, there's other pleasurable ways that are going to help keep you fast and be ready to go.
And just develop other skills, be more well-rounded.
Mm-hmm. You know, and especially for like, you know, especially for like junior Devo aged athletes doing multiple sports is just a must basically.
Yes.
You know, but you don't want to get pigeonholed into a certain sport too early. But, you know, for athletes who maybe have selected cycling as your main sport, you know, that's great, but you can still do other things too.
Oh,
my, and I don't know if this is a hot take on this or not.
I'll tell you.
I really think though that when you do multiple sports, ideally they should be done in totally separate seasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's why I think that like Nordic skiing and ski-mo and skiing works so well with cycling, because
right.
you can do them in completely different seasons. A lot of times when it kind of seems like, you know, if you're trying to train to your full potential, two different sports at one time, it just never really
almost
works.
Definitionally, you won't reach your potential either.
No.
And I should say again, and our take on this is, as a teenager, you have, and the way things are going, like you maybe you're the only opportunity in your life to really get as good at you can as you can at something, to kind of have some level of mastery at something. And so like I think a lot of parents reflexively want their kids to be well rounded, right? And I think it's great. Like do cycling, do music, do other stuff. It's when you get those cases where there's two sports that you're really straddling in between that bump.
Well, and especially if you have like two different coaches or belong to two different teams,
right,
that expect so much from you,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, like say you're following like a training plan,
right,
for your cycling, and you're on the swim team and
or lacrosse, rugby,
your swim
hockey.
Coach has at the same time
yeah,
has you doing that training plan. In my experience, I've just seen it be too much for people.
Yeah.
If they're trying to do both.
It's like you end up investing this huge effort to kind of get sort of far in both, when I think that effort would probably be better spent achieving something in one or the other.
And the thing is, you know, if you are training for one thing, but using different sports to achieve that, that's fine,
yes,
but it has to be a coordinated effort.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like, you know, like for instance, like kids that try to do soccer and cycling, the soccer always takes over because, you know,
yeah,
it's a team sport. You have to show up at the practices, and the cycling always takes a back seat, you know. So
that's what's better for you. Do soccer. But I'd say choose one. Don't.
But that's what I think is cool about the winter.
Yeah.
Is it gives you a chance to kind of like focus on other things, mm-hmm, let cycling become a little more secondary.
Yeah.
But these things are still ultimately,
it's in service of cycling.
Yeah.
Long
it's still
term.
Ultimately
yeah.
going to benefit your cycling. It just
right.
looks different over the winter.
Yeah.
And then during the cycling season, you can kind of focus on that, and you can do other activities that are going to benefit your cycling. But
yeah,
it has to be coordinated, if that makes any sense, you know? So I have just seen some kids that are trying to do, you know, competitive running, competitive cycling at the same time, have two different coaches kind of pulling them in different ways. And they either kind of have to pull one way completely, or they just kind of,
it just kind of ends up being a huge investment of effort to kind of spin in circles and
to just be tired all the time.
So, yes. Yeah.
But yeah, there's, you know, but you know, like for instance, like the Schemo kids, take Schemo for instance, you know, like if I'm working with a Schemo athlete, like I kind of leave them alone all winter.
Cause they're going to get the best training you possibly could. You don't need to tell them to do anything, right?
Yeah. Like I kind of leave them alone all winter, and the spring comes, it'll take a little bit of time to get their cycling legs back under, but it won't take that long.
No.
And then I would think that, you know, during the cycling season, they should.
And their Schemo coach probably feels great about turning him over to Maybird for the rest of the year, because they're going to do exactly what they tell them to do anyway.
Their
right?
cycling helps their Schemo, and their Schemo helps their cycling.
And that's just why those kids are so terrifying to race.
But again, it doesn't have to be Schemo, because same thing could be runners or
hiking
or you can do it any way, as long as you're, I think that, you pay a fortune to do Schemo. It forces you to be consistent.
So I want you to do speed skating. I want a Maybird kid to get into speed skating.
Speed skating would be awesome.
Crazy good, right?
Yeah. Someone out there needs to be a speed skater.
Someone open that. We'll do a Maybird.
They do it out in Kearns.
Yeah.
We actually kind of looked into it for Amy, and it was
really
pretty expensive too.
Still?
Yeah.
Gosh, that sucks. But I just need more spandex in my life.
Yeah, one thing to throw into with all this variety and all these different aerobic training options and so forth is make sure you continue to have like a rest day.
Yes.
Like a rest week, you know, like during
the same kind of rest structure we talk about.
Yeah, you know, you kind of have 3 weeks on and then an easy week, and then 3 weeks on and an easy week. I just feel like I should throw that out there real quick. So, yeah, the third one is variety. The fourth one is strength training.
Yes.
Strength training pairs really nicely with cycling.
Yep.
And, you know, during the season, it kind of needs to take a little bit of a back seat. But during the winter, you can put a little bit more of an emphasis on it. And we'll do a whole entire podcast on it. But just it's just kind of a reminder, strength training, what you're doing is you're basically teaching your muscles to fire with more motor groups at one time. So you can become stronger without getting bigger.
Which is so funny, because that's not how most people approach that, right? Yeah.
Well, and also, like, when you are doing strength training, it needs to be paired with aerobic training.
Yep.
Because aerobic training switches off mTOR, which, you know, if you combine strength training and aerobic training, it's going to keep you from getting too big. But also, strength training is probably one of the biggest ways that we create a better platform to handle more fitness later, because it's going to strengthen your bones. It's going to strengthen your connective tissue. It's going to make you more like, if you get in a crash, you're probably not going to break your collarbone as easily if you do weight training.
Yeah. For parents listening to this, there's a lot of great evidence that as you kind of get through your 50s, 60s and beyond, that like strength training is associated with way better health outcomes. Like way better. Like I'm right in saying that, right? Like
that's absolutely a
very well established, non-controversial scientific fact, right?
Yeah. I heard somewhere that like your grip strength has a huge correlation with like your longevity and so forth, which kind of makes sense, you know?
Yeah. Taking care of yourself now, you're going to have a much better time, you know, later on.
But yeah. So investing in some good strength training during the winter is going to, you know, it'll give you a better platform to be able to handle more fitness.
And I'll throw out, you hear Wukar thrown around a lot as part of this conversation. He's one of the many amazing assets we have in the Utah cycling community. He trains everybody good. That's kind of another Schemo thing, in my opinion, where it's good.
It's expensive.
He charges a fair price for how good he is. But if you've got three kids on the team, it might not be feasible. You can totally achieve it outside of that.
And there are other ways too. So if it's something you want to do and, you know, you don't have quite the WooCar budget, let me know.
Yeah.
There's other resources too that are, you know, and WooCar even has an app too.
Yeah. I will say if you have
it's kind of like Schemo. When you pay the money and you you feel more obligated to show up.
It's if you can do WUKAR. I've done it before. It's awesome. And I will say really quick, we should also mention there's a safety component to this. Do not just walk into the gym and hurt yourself. That's the classic. And we'll, you know, like, and I should say, you and I aren't really the like authorities on weight training safety. It's I like, and this is probably, there's a million great videos online on just here are the big five things where people go and herniate a disc on night one, trying to pride lift and all that stuff. We should say there is a huge safety element once you start talking about anything lifting that we should mention. Disclaimer.
Yeah. And Brady Preston even showed me like what he does, and it looked really good to me.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, so that strength, super important. It's something that, like, I think it's kind of one of the top secret weapons a lot of the pros lately.
100% of pros do this.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if there were any pros who don't have some amount of lifting in their training repertoire.
Yeah. So the next part of winter training is going to be, I just call it PT,
mm-hmm.
where you're doing like core work, Pilates, stretching. You know, if you've got like a knee that's bothering you, set up an appointment to go figure out why, work on bike fit, just stuff to make it so your body can handle more training when the season starts up again.
Yep.
Wait, when the winter training's over.
I was going to catch you there. Yeah. Dang it. You self-censored.
So, yeah. And then just along with that is just like addressing some mobility issues, you know, just again, the winter is just a great time to prepare your body to handle more awesomeness when the non-winter season starts.
There, did we debate last year, like the awesome season?
We were
going to
call it the awesome season.
We were trying so hard to make that work. The effort that went into like convincing ourselves that that was going to take
off. I'm hoping HIIT training takes off.
Is that this year's awesome season?
No, it's going to be better.
It's time for some HIIT training in the awesome season.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Anybody pick that up, you're awesome. Let us know.
Yeah. So those are some things you can do. Good things you can do during the winter training. I've said it before, my biggest rule of thumb, the thing that kind of like steers me during the winter is just I just remind myself, do something every single day that makes you a better athlete.
Amen. Preach.
And some of those days, that means rest.
Yep.
But really just being consistent during the winter is the key. And again, like I say, it's not going to happen. Like, you're not going to just magically have spare time that you're like, oh, I don't have anything to do. I'm going to go exercise.
Yeah.
It needs to be planned. You need to know what you're going to be doing. You need to carve out some time and you need to look forward to it.
Yep.
That's kind of the key, is just do something every day to make yourself a better athlete. I want to keep repeating that so it just kind of sticks in people's head, along with HIIT training. But but there's some mistakes that people make. We should probably warn about those.
Yeah, and we've kind of been warning along the way. Most of these, I'm sure we've already at least kind of touched on.
Yeah,
a bit,
but let's just talk.
We'll run over them really quick.
So I would say the biggest mistake people make is they don't take the off season.
Yeah.
They run like they'll finish their cycling season and then they'll just jump on schemo training or just jump on running training or just, they won't give themselves that quality rest they need between seasons. So I would say that's the first big mistake. The second one is people that is just not doing aerobic training.
Yep.
Consistently, you know, like just, if you're just downhill skiing all winter, that's great. That's fun.
Awesome. It's just
gonna,
not a recipe for optimal cycling performance.
No, you're going to start the season with more of a butter knife than a sword.
Sure.
And then another mistake that I think a lot of people make is too much bike intensity for no particular reason.
Just staring into my soul while you said that. Don't look at my Zwift rides.
So,
I'm
like
a bad example.
When you're focusing on like VO2 type efforts, those are really effective for 6 to 8 week periods, and then you need a transition between those. So, like, you can do some intensity during the winter, but it needs to be followed by a transition rest period. And really, there's really no reason during the winter to have a super sharp sword. You know, if you're starting to get to, like, if you've got like some national races coming up in March, you know, then maybe late January, February, you can start sharpening the sword a little bit.
What you fail to consider is that some of us eat our feelings and have a set amount of time to ride every day and would like to burn the most calories in that block of time as they possibly can to offset their other bad decisions. These people are also bad at bike racing and slow, so you shouldn't seek to emulate them. I should say, too, on the note of like people blowing off a break at all, if exercise is your mental health crutch, that's great. But this is one of the really tangible places where never being able to set it down hinders your performance. So if your intention is to be a high performance athlete, cycling or exercise in general being your mental health solution isn't great long term, because if you are never able to set this down, you are going to be at higher risk for crappy performances and injuries. So if performance is your goal, you need to have the relationship with cycling where you can set it down for a sec every now and again. Also me. Another reason why I kind of suck at this. So as always, don't do it the way I do it. Two things I wanted to throw in there to consider. Okay, well,
and then the last big mistake that one thing I want to throw out. We're talking about intensity, though. I do think that getting some intensity in another form, though, would be great.
Yeah.
Like if you want to get some running intensity once you're ready for it. Like hiking, doing those steep hikes, that's intensity. Yeah. You know, I think as long as it's in a non-cycling form, I think it's good for you. It's going to round you out pretty nicely. I think the other biggest mistake that people make is being miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's real.
You know, if you're miserable on the trainer, either A, do something else, or B, fix your setup so it's enjoyable. If you're out riding 4 hours a day in the inversion with slushy roads and, you know, you're out being miserable, you know, that's not going to be great long term. So be consistent, but don't be miserable. So just kind of like really quickly, like, in my opinion, kind of like an ideal week, an ideal winter training week might look something like this. And it can look like 1,000 different ways. This is just something I spent 20 seconds writing this down. But
disclaimer,
like,
disclaimed. We get it.
Okay. You know, you're going to have a rest day. Okay.
Okay.
Rest day. And then next day you could do strength in the morning, ride the trainer in the evening. And then the next day you could do running in the morning. And you could do like running, or you could do schemo, and you could do core that day. And then next day you could do strength in the morning, trainer in the evening. And then the next day you could do a steep hike and some more core in the evening. And then the next day you could just do a fun activity. And then on the weekend you do a long aerobic activity, which could be like downhill skiing, or like Joe and I, we like to do really long Maybird hikes. Those are super fun. But again, just really, really try to do something every day that's going to make you a better athlete. There are a lot of things that I don't do because they're fun, but I do because I like what they do for me.
Yeah.
And I like how they make me feel.
Yep.
And that's kind of how a lot of the winter training is. You know, it's like, yeah, like
it's not going to be a hoot in the moment,
but you feel good when you're done. And it makes you a better person, a better athlete. So, winter really is an opportunity. Don't waste it.
Yeah.
This is a chance where most of the people in the Nike Peloton are going to lose fitness. Their swords are going to turn into butter knives over the winter. And if you can just be consistent and take advantage of this opportunity to become a better athlete, you're not going to be starting over every season.
Climb off the ladder.
Sure.
Fall off the ladder. Secret word is HIF.
HIF.
HIF. There you go. Text HIF. As always, be safe.
What does HIF stand for, Joe?
Help, I'm fainting. I actually had to think for a sec, so I hid behind the funny answer. Healthy is fast.
There you go. Thank you.
Help, I'm farting.
Help, I'm fat.
Oh, that's this whole, that's just my memoir. Okay, I fell off the ladder. Text that to Dan. As always, be safe. Have an enjoyable week. Look for information on the upcoming Team Zwift ride to be published soon. Peace out, guys.